Now you're.
Tonight, I'm happy to welcome back to the store Michael Rinaldini, Sebastopol's local Taoist priest. I love saying that. It's so cool. Sebastopol's local Taoist priest. It's like, in it, you know, what are there? Three places in America where you can say that? And he's a Jigong practitioner, Jigong teacher, Taoist priest, Taoist teacher, good friend, and great supporter of the store. And tonight he
tea
will...
Tea drinker.
And tea drinker. Yes, tea drinker extraordinaire.
Puer.
Puer tea, yes. So maybe you should give a talk here on Puer. And tonight he will be talking about his teacher, who was here...
2006, almost to the week.
Yeah. His teacher is Wan Su Jiang, Jigong teacher, medical doctor, humanitarian, and hero. Thank you.
Thank you. So, apologize for the small screen. So I'm okay with, like, you, like, moving your chairs forward, and, you know, there's room, you know, really close by. So if you... The sound is pretty good. I tested it at my home. I'm not sure if this is the biggest space. But come closer. And move around if, you know, once I start it, if you need to reposition yourself. Yeah, I feel like real comfortable.
Thank you.
What I'm going to do tonight is not so much like what I've done in the past, where I've prepared and, like, given, like, a lecture or a talk. Come on, David. This is more of a show and tell. So I prepared. Of course, I have to prepare, but I didn't really prepare because it's a show and tell, and most of it's just going to come out of my head, of, you know, memories, going back to 2000, the first time I went to see him in Beijing, all the way recent to. Seems like just a few months ago, but it was back in June and July that I was there the last time. And Lori was one of the people that was with me. And, like, I went with 10 people. And the first time I went, well, I went by myself and I met this this guy that led the tour in Beijing in the airport, and then there was another woman that joined us. So it was like going there on my own, but I was with a little group, and that's who introduced me to Master Wan. The second time I went was the following year, 2001, and two of my local students from here went with me. 2003, when I went back, I went by myself, and that was for the purpose of getting ordained as a priest. And then just a few months ago. So what I'm going to do is just, like, all these different things. I have all of these slide pictures, but, you know, I can't figure out how to get it onto a disc. So, but I do have, I bought a DVD camera this past year, so I have little DVDs. But, of course, we don't have time to go through all of this. So they're going to, I'm going to put it on, I'm going to look at it for a minute, fast forward it. You know, you're just going to get a little capsule of it. And then it's going to be like other... Well, I gave you, if those that came in late, I'm not sure how many copies I have, but I made copies of this article that was written by Janet Anderson, one of my local students here, and she wrote the article. She actually created a web page about Master Wan, which has since disappeared, but it's coming back because I'm building a new web page, and I'm going to be... joining her thing that she made onto my webpage. Because he has no real webpage. It comes and goes. It's not real good quality. And you'll get an idea of the kind of quality of stuff that they do when you look at this DVD here. So I think what we'll do is so that you get to see him in action here, and then we'll go back and I'll show you some pictures of my first trip and more talking. But this was, it's a two desk, like a lot of hours of his training on in here. And when I first got a hold of these, this is what I got like in 2006. He sent me a big box of them, and I sold sold them all out, and then when he was here, the rest of them were sold. So I only have this one and another one, which please don't ask to buy it from me, because I'm not letting them go, because there's no more of them. So, and the quality is pretty poor. So, but you really get to see him in action, like he really is as a teacher. And it's all in Chinese with the translation, and the translation is just like when his students that translate for us. He talks for 5 minutes and they translate it in, you know, one line, you know. So you know a lot was missed. And that's what it was like every time I go to China. When he came here, he tells these long stories and then you get this little translation. And so, but it's on the DVD, it's the essence of what he's talking about. So, you know, I'll just pass this around and you could take a look at that, and I'll just start right in with this. You can let me know if it's loud enough in the back.
I can turn off lights.
Oh, okay. I think it may be better. Yeah, I think so. Everyone have a good view of it? A little introduction here. And feel free to ask questions. It's more like a conversation tonight. This is not him talking. I don't think it is. Huh? No. Okay, I'm gonna fast forward a little bit. You get a good, glimpse of a lot of China. And that's, yeah. In my class tonight, we went outside and we were gathering some moonlight energy. And I was thinking, well, that's just like Master Wan. That's what he does. When you go to his place, all of the Qigong is done outside, and you'll see the courtyard where they practice. But he's always taking groups, even if you go there by yourself, they take groups around different places in Beijing, these nice little parks, or there's, or much further away into the mountains or monasteries. And he's really big on doing Qigong out in nature. And because a lot of what he says is, you know, you're absorbing the nature qi, or sometimes he refers to it as the jing qi. But a lot of it is just the nature qi, you know, what's right here in front of us. So he's doing a system of Qigong that's called Bagua Hung Dao Gong. And that's a system that he developed when he was younger, putting together different systems, traditional Chinese medicine, the Bagua system, different Qigong systems, and the Yin Qing, and that's what it came up with. It's not a lot of exercises as a group, and it all, it's very much a tonifying for those that know about Qigong. There's all different kinds of reasons for doing Qigong, but Ken was very heavily into tonifying three dantians and a lot of different things. He was doing a practice that we do almost in every class, bringing the energy down and sending it into the upper dantian, middle dantian, and lower dantian. He does it standing up, sitting down, lying down, in all these different postures. So I don't, let's see. He gets into the basic, see there was lying down doing it. The further he gets into this, then he's doing it for specific things. For high blood pressure, for constipation, for back problems. So that's what the remaining 2 or 3 hours is. He goes through his general program, the different levels, and then he starts breaking it down to specific health conditions. So, we'll stop here, otherwise we won't have time to go through all of the other stuff. Any questions?
What's the relationship of that to Tai Chi?
I'm going to let David answer that one. David's when people come to me, because I don't teach Tai Chi, when people come to me, email or phone, or and I say, you know what, you want to learn Tai Chi, go to David Parker over there.
The one thing I would say simply, without knowing too much about this practice, is that Qigong is a very general term and includes many different kinds of exercises. And Tai Chi, which came from a martial art but is used more as a health practice these days, certainly qualifies as a Qigong practice under that kind of general definition. But not all Qigongs come from martial arts. In fact, most of them probably don't. Most of them are probably more from medical or intellectual kind of traditions. So Tai Chi is a Qigong, but not all Qigong is Tai Chi. And then the number of different forms and styles, as Michael was saying, goes on, many different kinds.
So did that. They're related, closely related,
yeah,
brothers and sisters of the same family.
Qigong means energy work, right? So any kind of energy work that you use with qi. That's why Tai Chi is a type of Qigong, because it's a type of energy work.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, here's...
Okay, we're on the Great Wall.
The Great Wall. Mr. Wan, well, he was with us, but he wasn't... But you got to see, if you're going to go to China, you're going to go on the Great Wall. And there's Lori. She was with me. And
that's
Tracy.
Tracy.
Yeah. And that's my great video.
Coming along. Side of the Great Wall.
There's us doing Qigong on the Great Wall.
Sweet.
Yeah, very yummy. When I got back, my shirt was like, I can wring it out. It was so full of water.
Routine that you learn, like Tai Chi?
Yeah, there's a lot to learn. And, you know, Master Wan's system is just one of the systems that I practice and teach. Because, you know, kind of not partially because his system is relatively simple and there aren't a lot of different forms of it. They're very powerful, but there are a lot of other exercises that I that I teach from different teachers. This is actually a form called Wuchi Palms Facing Heaven, who I learned from one of Master Wan's teachers, Master Duan, who came to Sebastopol years ago, and I also visited him on my first trip there. and he has a his system he calls Wu Qi Qigong, and that was one of his movements. And sometimes I videoed with the lens cap on. Missed some really good stuff occasionally. This is the base of the Great Wall, the gate. Okay, here we are back at the center. This is one of his top students, John. And this is us in one of their training rooms. They do, you know, I said before, we do most of the Qigong outside, but when we do, sometimes when there's a smaller group and we have a particular focus, we may go inside these practice rooms.
It looks like it's going double speed, is that right?
We're doing a Kung Fu stuff, maybe we're just really good and going fast. But I could hear him talk, so I don't think... Yeah.
He's just fast.
Okay, that's normal speed. Mm. So he was, when Master Wong goes on the tour, he brings his senior students. And so this John is one of the students that he was here and always goes with him. Traditional Dutch Chinese instruments, but they have a bad habit of playing Western, especially American tunes, and you just wonder why are they doing that? Jingle bells.
Good morning.
Morning. Okay, thanks.
This is his probably his senior advanced student. This last trip, she didn't really do a lot with us because in a practice or a training, she basically sprained her ankle, so she's taking it easy. So this is the courtyard. This is I call it the compound. And so everything, all of these group practices are done outside.
I recognize her name. I think that people who aren't in here.
No, this is these are everyone here. This is my friend Beth. That's my wife Lynn over there. Renee's when we have I don't have any video of the class sessions, but. If he's there, sometimes there's problems. But if the clinic's going on and he's there, then he's part of it. The students are doing a lot of it, but he's in that same room being part of the healing as well. And then in these rooms up there, those are like the clinic rooms, and then also down along the side, where after you get a group healing, then you go up and you get... but there's individual rooms that have beds, and you may get an acupuncture treatment in those rooms. And then there's a couple other group rooms where you get, get like foot massage and bathing your feet in some herbal concoctions. Well, there is, outside of the obvious, acupuncture is using needles and putting in that room on the point. Qigong is having the same effect from the movement and the exercises and the, you know, working with the energy. It's all part of the same system we're talking about. Yeah. But, you know, it's moving your body and your mind and working with the energy. But it's all traditional Chinese medicine. And you know, people just think of that as acupuncture and Chinese herbs. It includes all of these things, including Taoist meditation. I mean, it includes the different massages as well that all come out of the same system, the same theoretical kind of orientation. More of that. Okay, I think we're done with this one. Okay, so maybe I'll show some other stuff before we... when you go there, he gives you this package in one of their nice little medical Qigong bags. They didn't bring one. And this is similar to... Well, he always gives out something in this booklet, and I have the one that I got in 2008, and I know this one is more updated. So I'll just pass this around. Some of it's in Chinese, and some of it's in English, and a lot of pictures. And then this is, I only have one of these. Did you get one of these? Yeah, he used to, someone, I think an American student has put this together. And here he talks about the Taoist music as being a benefit. And then this is another one, a recent one. We were going to meet this old Taoist here. This was who, the older person. We were told we were going to meet a real Qigong Taoist master. And then we were going to meet his teacher. And so the younger person was like in his 80s. And then we were going to meet someone that was in his upper 90s. And so it didn't work for that other person, but we met somebody else instead. So it's not so much about him. Actually, there's something in here I guess I'm supposed to read. So maybe I can pass this around and then let that come back to me and I can read some stuff. And then this was this lady, the doctor, and she's famous for her thumb. And the first time we went there, we heard about her, and even the second time, and then the third time, we're always hearing about her. And I think when they came here and went home, he went immediately to see her because it was her birthday. And I'm kind of getting confused whether she's 106 or 126. But it could be 126. And I don't... but she's very old, obviously, 106, 126. What's the difference? And she's a bone-setting doctor. And it's on... Some of you may have seen Francesco Garipoli's movie, Qigong for the 21st Century. She's one of the doctors that are featured in it. And she says on that video, if I came to America, I just have to bring my thumb. Because she does all of her treatments using her thumb. And so when we were there this time, I don't know who did it, but who created this. But now they made this like a massage tool that imitates her thumb. And so you can buy this now. And actually I work with it a lot. I've just decided to keep it in my sack because I'm always running into people that need a little massage or something and, you know, just, you know, press into it. So you can look at those. You can see her there. Let me stand up and show you a couple of pictures. So I'm really jumping around, like there's a lot of, you know, it's hard to do it chronologically. So this is a recent thing that because he's responsible for my being ordained as a priest, he didn't actually ordain me. He's not a Taoist priest. But that my second trip when I went there, he had a Taoist priest that was temporarily, like, you know, living at his center. And that's who I met the first time. And then when I went back to get ordained, it was this Taoist priest that ordained me. But I really feel like, you know, it's at some point it doesn't really matter who did the ordination, because Master Wan is really, you know, my main China connection. And so he's really my Taoist teacher. So he's giving me a little certificate here that we actually made on the spot. One of the people that went with me is an artist, and I gave her some paper and I wrote out something. And because he knows he's everything that I do is kind of like connected to China and Taoism through him. And so we kind of gave him a little formal acknowledgement of that. Because he's always given me certificates and plaques and these all of these big things. And so we gave him this certificate of recognition that Master Wan Sijian is the root founder of the American Dragon Gate lineage, because that's the lineage that I've created here in this country, which is that goes connected to the Longmen Dragon Gate, the Kuanzen, the complete perfection Taoist. But it's even though that's what I'm ordained into, it's not right for me to continue saying that who I ordain will be a Kuanzen Taoist in this Longmen tradition, because it's mainly a monastic order. And so I'm not a monk, and the people that I'm training are not monks. So we're the American non-monastic order of the Longmen. And so our name is the American Dragon Gate. Still the Dragon Gate, but with the American version. So this is the last morning we were leaving, and so we formally presented this to him. So he has a copy and I have a copy.
What
is Taoist name?
Yeah.
Taoist, not Taoism, or?
Well, this says Taoist. Is that, you're saying Taoist, it says Taoist.
Well, that's the same thing. Remember, it's, They went through a change in how the Romanization of the Chinese. There's several different systems that translate the Chinese. The opinion is the most popular, but before that it was the Wade's Guiles, and then there was even another one. But so the spelling is basically different, and pronunciation is probably different too. So you get a combination of both. Like sometimes you see qi is spelled qi, and then you are still seeing it spelled with the Wade's Guile as chi. So it's just not all Americans are aware of that. And then I just read something recently that some American, like, scholars and experts in the language prefer the pronunciation of the Wade's Guile. They say if you write it out in that style, it's easier to pronounce it like that, which, you know, to me it doesn't matter because I can't pronounce it anyway. But if you go to China, it's in pinyin. It's not in the Wade's Guile. And so, like, the rest of the world hasn't caught up with what China decided as the official romanization of the Chinese characters. So even they say it differently, in their own publications. So it doesn't really matter. Okay, we'll do another one, which this was our big trip that we went on. This we were aiming towards this city. It's really not very far out of Beijing, Daotong. It turned out to be longer. I thought it was like 300 kilometers. and even going at very fast speeds in their bus, it still took like 4 or 5 hours to get there. And when we talk about speeding, I mean, I can talk about that for a long time, but they really speed. They speed in local traffic, and they super speed on the highways, and everyone does. They get away with it because when they go on the buses, another name for his center is the what's on that thing, like Beijing or Medical Exchange Center. So a number of years ago, because of all this Qigong problems going on in China, Master Yuan decided to have his center be an official Red Cross center. And so that's how they got this traditional Red Cross Medical Exchange Center as part of their really official name. So they have this big bus, like 20 passenger, and it has Red Cross signs on it, and here they are literally 90, 100 miles an hour, passing people on the highway. Someone gets in their way that's maybe only going 70 or 80 or maybe 90, and they start pressing their emergency horn, and then people pull over, and you can see that they're looking back like, well, there's a bunch of foreigners in there. So it's comical, but it's really a little scary, too. I think the next time I do a big trip, I want to go on train. Yeah. So here we are going on one of these trips. Lori has some of, in her video, some of that shot taken from within the bus. So there's no chronology. Well, this is July 4th this year, and we are at this very high mountain area. And we're visiting some very old historical Taoist monasteries and temples. We don't do Qigong in public as much and freely as they used to do, especially not in big groups. Because you do see people doing Qigong when we go to these talks really well. Just people doing Qigong, but it's the big group thing that they don't want anymore. So that's why Master Yuan, I used to hear that they would take us to these famous Tai Chi parks, but no one can do that in really big groups anymore. Well, do you know the controversy around Falongong, or anywhere? I don't want to get too much into it, but it was something that the leader of that was causing a lot of problems because of his philosophy and everything. It's very complicated, but it's put some problems with the government. Most times it probably wouldn't be bothered, but whenever I go, it's a short period of time, and they're like, even when I've gone with the students to foreign places, and I did some Qigong inside the Forbidden City in one of my earlier trips, and they said, Michael, you shouldn't really be doing that. Yeah, and actually, you could get arrested for doing stuff like that in public, and especially inside the Forbidden City. Well, yeah, and I think it was more they were telling them, you know, basically. You know, your government is, you know, doesn't know everything. and kind of maybe question your government and stuff. And so, you know, the Chinese government doesn't want to hear that, no matter who it is. And they're still in the Chinese government, still pretty oppressive. So here we are in one of the temples, and Master Wan's explaining to us things about it. But usually we're talking about the deities that are there.
Make friendship together. Work peace.
Always participating in these little temples and, you know, doing the bowing and offering incense. But when you look at the Chinese people that are there too, they're very devout about it. They're not just like the touristy things and walking around and, oh, you know, doing and calling. They're like taking it very serious. They're buying these big things of incense and they're offering it. And you see them, they go from one temple to the other. It's like being on a pilgrimage. But they're very devout, very serious about it. Now, this is in that compound where we were. This was like a library, and I know that a lot of these books there are very valuable books in Taoism. They're probably like a collection of the complete Taoist canon, and I wouldn't be surprised, as well as very ancient books. There's probably millions of dollars worth of ancient scriptures that are in these places. But in this one place right there. And we were there. That's my son and that was my wife there. That was my father. Oh, wait, this is one. Now, this is Nate here.
Only take it. Okay. 3 days late.
This where we were on this mountain is sort of like a tourist kind of temple place. So it's only a few Taoists that really live there. So it's not like a living Taoist monastery temple practice center. But we're on the outside of this little cave area that's built into the mountain there. And this is where, like, when this was a live community, this is inside of here. It's carved into it. And Master Wan talked about how the Taoists, these ancients, would live in these carved-in places. And they were, like, smaller cells further into them. And I'm not sure if we'll get to see it, where he's talking about the Taoists that went in there. This was like for very extreme training, where they would go in with no food and water and just, you know, stay in there for periods of time and do like real hardcore training. See, like, these little grottos inside there. And then this was like down below. There was more practice areas down below. Now this is in another place. It's 2 days later, July 6th. we went to another mountain site, another 5 hours. This was the focus point would be close. But this was another 5 hours away, another 100 mile an hour trip. So 5 hours going at 100 miles an hour, it's not a lot of ground. So we get there, and we're already at a good elevation, and then we take the cable car ride up there.
Lynn is a little nervous. Lenny nervous?
Bring in the cash car back. Okay, here we are, we're up there, Mark. It's all along the cliff side of the mountain, so everything is all, like walking, right along the mountain. And then, so this was one of his older teachers that was there. And they meet on the steps. It's a little amazing. They met. The old teacher comes down halfway, and Master Wand walks up halfway. Who knows what he's saying? I brought a bunch of Americans here, a bunch of Westerners, coming, and impress them, say something Taoist. Who knows what he was saying? So he's in his 80s, and then we were going to, the other teacher was his teacher. So now we're at the top part of where we were aiming for, and this is like his center up here, his temple, where he lives. And so the first thing they pull out is some watermelon, and then we have some really nice tea that later on we find out that the tea was made from tea leaves, taken right from, right in this wooded area, right there, making a really nice green tea.
Is the watermelon grown there?
No, someone probably carried it up. You can get up there by walking as well.
It's very special.
Oh, that's the tea.
Everybody,
well, we didn't
pick one, two, three, my cosmos.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. One, two, three, look here.
Here's another time when I'm taping with the cap on. Okay, then he's leading us in some qigong or meditation. So later we find, when we were coming up, he's telling us this story and it's written down in these books here. When he was a little kid, I always used to hear, when he was younger, he lived at this Taoist temple there and did some training. And then this time coming up, I found out how old he was. So the first time he went there, he was like 9 years old. And he lived, and he showed us the cabin, or not the cabin, the stone, little hut there, where he stayed. And then I think it was when we were 15, something like that. He went back again and stayed for another period of time. Of the traditional 8 pieces of brocade. And some other things are a little different. A lot of massage he did. So this big thing he's doing with his belly. He's got a nice little belly there, and he's really massaging it.
He's in his 80s, and he can sit like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my legs are telling me. We were sitting. You can't tell it, but we were sitting. It was like a little incline, and we were sitting to the back. And I was sitting there, and I was my inner thighs were killing me because it wasn't a position that I normally sit in, even flat on the ground, but not to mention leaning backwards because we were slightly on a hill. So he had a good spot. He had a nice cushion there. But yeah, I don't know if I have it on film. He was raising his leg all the way above his head. I think we're showing off.
There you go.
The main thing to do, and they're basically saying it doesn't matter which form of Qigong or Tai Chi you're doing, but they kept on saying you need to just practice. You want to get good at it, you just need to practice. And another part up there, there was a group of. That's okay. We'll go on to the next one. Questions? So let me tell some stories. Like, because there's this. Let's see, in some of those booklets, you're going to see him working with orphans and kids that have a lot of deformities. So because the title of this talk is Master Wan, Qigong Teacher, what else? Humanitarian and Hero. And so the humanitarian and the hero part come in because, first of all, he starts off as a medical doctor. Well, he really starts off in the army because that's what happens to a lot of people. They go into the army, his family, his parents, his father was an army doctor, and his mother was like a nurse. I don't think she was in the military, but it was a long history of a military doctor. So it was just natural for him to go into the army and be trained as a military doctor. And so when he was, so in 1976, there was the earthquake they just had this year, like 80,000 people were killed, something like that. In 1976, the major earthquake they had there, 200,000 people were killed, with another 100,000 injured and displaced and all of that. So he was right in the middle of that as a military doctor. And so he talked about some of this when he was here, and he always talks about some of his experiences that he had. So this is like the hero part of his the story. So one of the things, so in addition to the regular stuff of going out and rescuing people and doing medical services, he rescued a lot of people at the risk of his own life, and he likes to tell this story because it connects his earlier Qigong training. You know, it's sort of like he had this revelation. Out in the field of how powerful these, you know, real basic trainings he had as a young person from these masters. And so pretty early he was taught how to meditate. So he gets himself into a situation, and it's written down in these books, of going into a building to rescue, and no one wanted to go, so he volunteered with a couple of his co-workers there. And then there's a big aftershock, and the rest of the building falls down and blocks and locks and, down in the basement. And they're in there for several days, and they start realizing we're going to run out of oxygen pretty soon. So he says that at that point he remembered his older teaching. So he was not really meditating at that time and really maybe doing much Qigong. But it was a turning point, because what he did was he did a lot of meditation while they were waiting to be rescued to conserve the oxygen. And so the other two guys that were there, they died. And only Master Wan survived because he just did a lot of meditating and he conserved his oxygen, his need for oxygen. And so I think that was a turning point when he went back and he started like really getting into Qigong again and reinvesting in his studies. And there's a story that when the Cultural Revolution got into swing, his family wanted to burn a lot of his these traditional Chinese medicine medical books, and so they burnt a lot of that. And Master Wan, in violation of what his parents were saying, he went and rescued a few of these important books, and that's where he said he that was sort of some source material for when he put together his Bagua Hun Dao Gong system. So he kept on doing stuff like that, and the Chinese government kept on rewarding him for doing that, being a big, putting himself out there in times of when they were going through their stuff. And so he kept on getting what he wanted. Like, so years later, when he started getting these young disciples, these young students that came to live with him, they first started living in his home, in his apartment, with him and his wife and their kids. And then it got too much, and then the students then lived in local caves, close by. And at some point, he was, it's not like he earned, saved his money, from his military doctor pay, but the government somehow gave him this whole complex there that we see. He didn't save to buy that. The government gave that to him to run it as a Qigong, as a medical hospital, but heavily Qigong and acupuncture, or an Oriental medicine hospital. And he continues to do that kind of stuff. Like he, during the SARS epidemic there, him and his students, has a picture of them in their hospital, in their gowns. They were very much involved in treating people that had SARS. And he, or Ding Ding, that's the translator named Ding Ding, she was saying that other groups, because everyone was getting SARS, whether the medical workers and the people, and they said to Master Wan, how come your students, your team, are not getting sick? Like, not one of the students that helped with the SARS stuff got sick. And Master Wan said, well, we're not getting sick because we do our Qigong every day. And so that was a real convincing argument about how powerful their Qigong was, what they were doing.
How much time do you spend a day doing Qigong normally? Like that clinic or wherever it was.
Well, when you're there, you it's not like you do it hours and hours. There are other programs where you literally do it hours and hours, all day long. This isn't as intense. You do it early in the morning at 6:30, and then you have treatments, and then Then you may do some practice things later in the morning, and then there's, you know, we're going, coming and going and doing a lot of things. So he's not into this intensive doing it, especially as a visitor or foreign guest. But I know that if you went there and you had cancer, and he would be instructing you to, like, go home and do a lot of it if you have something serious like that. So when we go as foreigners and guests, you know, they're trying not to overwhelm us. You know, just being in China is stressful enough. So they're not trying to overdo it. But, you know, there's this other group in China where they call it the Qigong, the medicineless hospital. So you may have heard about
Chan?
That.
Chan? The name of Chan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where it's not there anymore. But that in that school approach, they do Qigong there all day long. And I did some, here in this country it's known as Qilao Qigong, and I studied with Luke Chan, and when I went on retreats with him to get training with him, we basically did it around 6 to 9 hours a day. We had 3-hour sessions and then a break and then another 3 hours and then come back at night for a few more hours. So it was a lot. And their recommendation is, if you have something that's so life-threatening that modern science and medicine hasn't found a cure for it, you're not going to get over it with even a couple hours a day. You basically have to live it. You've got to do Qigong around your waking hours. And then maybe you'll survive the cancer. But when I went on these retreats and met people that followed that method, they were people that had real advanced levels of cancer. And here it was, you know, they were beyond their prognosis, or, you know, they were beyond their termination date. You know, they're like, oh, I was supposed to die last year, this in January, but here I am 2 years later, and I'm still here. And my doctors don't know why, but it's because they really committed themselves to doing that kind of Qigong. And so my feeling is now it's not so important to a degree which form of Qigong you do. If you do it for that amount of time, then it's going to be beneficial. You know, so you don't have, there's not like one system that can take care of all of these problems. It's the system as a whole. You just need a core group of exercises, and there are many of these core group of exercises. And then you just need to intensify it. You need to do it relative to whatever your health condition is. And then, you know, most of the times it will be successful, but they are also not saying you don't have to do anything else. They're saying do your other Western medicine as well. You know, if it makes sense, and if it's something that is, you know, been tested and, you know, worthwhile. They're saying, do that and do your Qigong. And every study that looks at these things, the control group, the group that just does Western medicine, and then the group that just does Qigong, and then the third group that does Western medicine and Qigong, that's the group that has the best, you know, results. So you can't argue with that. So.
This is based on Luke Chan's studies?
No, that's general. That's general Qigong research, not Luke Chan. So the humanitarian part, the last, in 2003, they showed me one of their homemade videos of him going to... They kind of like adopted a little town and created an orphanage there, and somewhere in these readings, I was going to read it. A lot of Japanese go to see him, and who was it? The wife of the Japanese ambassador gave Master Wan like 50,000 yuan. Donated it to his work, and so he basically has an orphanage homeless children or children that are coming from really poor situations. A lot of them you'll see in some of those journal booklets. A lot of kids have a lot of extreme deformities, you know, arms and legs missing, and so he goes there and he provides basic, you know, medical treatment as a doctor.
Western, because
he's a Western, you know, regular doctor. So he's always bringing medicine to them and helping them out, and educationally as well as in the medical stuff. And so he's always doing that. So he's even when we were there, they kept on small groups in one of their smaller vans. All of a sudden, you'd see them in their Red Cross outfits, and they would be heading off for a couple-hour drive to go to. When we were there, was right after the earthquake. So they went off and did some, you know, relief work for the people that were displaced from the earthquake. So that's like the hero and the humanitarian. And when he was here, a lot of the profit that we made from his time here, that was all donated back to him, and that's what he, you know, that's kind of like why he does some of this stuff coming to America. He doesn't really need to come here. But he does that to help gather some money for his orphanage and his humanitarian work. Because, you know, they don't make a lot of money. They do have a lot of expenses, and they have a lot of things that they do, and they house anywhere from 30 to 40 kids there, and they're providing for all of their needs. And those kids aren't paying tuition. They're paying for their education and for all their training and medical and, you know, their life needs. And he helps them out when they go to higher education. So let me see what. So here, this one. How are we doing on time?
8:40.
Okay. So this is the last one. This is our last night there. So it's a little bit more casual. And it's getting dark. It was started in the afternoon, and then all of a sudden it was dark. So it actually starts. I guess this is the afternoon, and we're doing. This is like one of our last practices and training in the afternoon. So this is a form that.
Focus. The middle dantian?
This is part of the Bhagwa form that he teaches, and it's the Bhagwa circle walking. But it's within this Bhagwa Hundal Gong. There's another form of Bhagwa walking, which is more of a martial art, and this is how he's this is a good example of what he adapted from the martial arts Bhagwa system into this medical Qigong form. But it's just called Bhagwa circle walking. Within his system, and you know, this is one of the things that I practice and teach here in Sebastopol.
So when you're doing the movement, what are you doing with your mind?
Well, here, if you listen, I'm wanting to get this.
Lower dantian.
See, I'm asking him, and he's confirming. Even though I know this, I just want to get it on tape again. That's where you're supposed to focus. The lower dantian.
You think about it?
You, it's not like you're thinking about it, but you're breathing. It's all a lot of stuff going on. You're breathing, and you're walking around, and you're
concentrating on the lagoon points. And think of heaven and earth. Heaven and earth.
You're thinking of heaven and earth energy, basically the energy of the universe coming in into our lagoon points. These points, these are points on the meridian system, and the lagoon points are very powerful points. A lot of energy comes and goes. So while you're walking around, you're focused on those points, and there's this very core principle in Qigong and Taoism. that wherever the mind is focused, that's where the energy flows to. There's different ways of saying the same thing, but that's why you're breathing, focusing here, just your mind being focused here attracts the universe energy to you. And that's like how a lot of Qigong and
it's kind of like a slide.
It's like the basic principle for all of that. Get towards the end here. He's showing the Tai Chi ruler. The ending is real. That we're like playing around in at night, and let me just show you a little bit of that. Okay. So we just wanted to get them individually on tape. Because I was, by this time, it was like 2 weeks at the end, and they get to know you really, really close.
I come from province Shandong of China. Okay. I'll issue some Tai Chi for you.
Thank you.
not bad. Not bad. Too quick.
So it's these kids that do the treatment, when you go there and during these clinics, they're doing, you know, different things. Lori pulls that, wasn't that fun? Lori made a really good movie of all of the trip. It's like an hour and a half, so unless we're going to be here for another hour, get into it. But she points out, like, here they are playing around, they're outside doing their kung fu. Another time they're in there in their white jackets, and they're doing the chi healing and massages on people. Another group is doing the foot massages. Another person's leading a group of people in meditation. And then we have a Taoist ceremony. Then they're all in their Taoist robes. They're not Taoist priests or ordained, but they've been trained. The time when the priest was there, there was another woman there, a priestess, who gave them very thorough training in Taoist practices. And many times, I've seen them in other places where they're at the White Cloud Temple, the hub of Taoism in China, and they're there and they're doing ceremonies in front of these, you know, priests that have been doing it all their lives, and they have and they're just part of all of that, and they're reading these sacred texts, and obviously in Chinese, and they're doing real genuine ceremonies. And then they're on the ambulances and going to help people, doing, sometimes they translate it as it almost sounds like psychotherapy, but sometimes they're just talking to people that, you know, family people have been killed and they're kind of living as orphanages and refugees. So they're doing all of these extreme stuff, and then they're trying to get an education, and then some of them go on to medical school, and some go into regular medical school, and some become in Chinese medicine. Some go in other health fields. Some become translators, and some of them go through all of that training, and then they come back, and then they get on. Then they're on the paid staff that works with Master Wan, part of the hospital there. And so, just in the last year, his center was recognized by the Chinese government as an official rehabilitation hospital. So that was a big landmark for them to get that kind of recognition.
How young are these boys when they start?
Some of these boys or kids were there from the very beginning. And then even in the 8 years that I've been coming and going, I've wondered, well, where did Joy go to? Well, she was there from the very beginning, and now she's is in college. And so the original kids came from poor families. They came from some of the really young guys that I met there earlier. They came from the Shaolin Temple. So they were already on this career path to be in this world of healing and martial arts. So some of these young guys that are there now, I met 8 years ago, and when they were really little, and their skills were really perfected, even at by 10 years old and 12 years old. These were like real kung fu, you know, masters at that young age. And so a number of them came and stayed at his center. They helped teach the other kids that came there that didn't know, have that advanced training. And so nowadays kids go there that are coming from different disadvantaged situations, and it's not like money doesn't buy you into a place here. It's sort of like your life situation gets you to come there. And so every time I go there, there's like some of the younger kids I don't recognize anymore because they're like several years older, and some of them I do recognize, and then then there's another crop of kids that are there that I never met before. And then some of them, like my son, who's 16, got a crush on a couple of them, because some of the girls act so young. How old is she? She's like 24. But they're very little, and they're very young, and they're very innocent, and they're very genuine. And so, maybe that's the remedy for staying youthful. Act youthful, and you'll be youthful. So I think that's all I have. If you want to come and up and look through this, this is from my first visit, and then some pictures of when I was ordained in here. So I think we're running out of time to go too much to go more. So thanks for coming.
Thank you.
After one comes by next year, which is a strong possibility, I'm sure we'll get them to come here and talk.
That'd be wonderful. We would love to have them back.
Yeah.